I've started a club or two in my lifetime. They started with lofty goals and a generic name. Best Friends Club, Sparks Friends Club, the No Homers Club. We made membership cards, usually out of tin foil. We had club bylaws, things like be kind to each other, and no one who likes Kimberly can join. We had a few club meetings, which divulged into the depths of Kimberly's cruelty. The club never lasted more than a week, and they certainly never generated income, unlike Christy Thomas's club. In the inaugural book of the Babysitter's Club, Christy comes up with an idea of the titular club that went on to generate income and adventure for many girls, and maybe some boys, both in Stony Brook and around the world, both fictional and real. Christy demonstrates maturity while running and creating the club. She considers feedback from each member and delegates in a professional way. The book also showcases Christy's immaturity, particularly when dealing with Stacy, the new girl, and how she deals with her mother's love interest, Watson, and his family. Christy is depth as well as this book. This is a promising start to the greatest book series ever created. Come at me, J.K. Rowling. This is Rereading My Childhood, The Babysitter's Club number 1, Christy's Great Idea. It starts on a hot day at the end of class. The clock ticks and Christy loudly and audibly expresses her excitement for the end of class and she can go home to her air conditioning. Her teacher punishes her with an essay assignment on the word decorum. The first time we see Christy, she's shouting before thinking, talking before her brain analyzes what she wants to say. This can bite Christy in the butt, like almost breaking up the Babysitter's Club just as the club starts, or with her teacher forcing her into a punishment in the form of homework. Christy finds her best friend Marianne. The first time we see her, she's biting her fingernails and talking about her incredibly strict father. Even for that time, he's incredibly strict. If the book were written today, I bet he'd be one of those parents who stand outside their kids' classroom staring at them through the little window in the door. He'd probably give her a cell phone pre-programmed with his phone number and his phone number only, so he can reach her at any moment. Thank God she stands up to him later. I'm always rooting for Marianne. Christy and Marianne rush home so Christy can get there before her little brother David Michael. Christy watches her little brother while her mom is at work. Ms. Thomas is a single mom slash divorcee, which is progressive for an 80s book targeted at children. I remember all the dead mothers on television when I was a kid. Every single parent, usually the father, had to have a dead spouse, usually the wife. They couldn't utter the word divorce, and the television producers certainly weren't going to have a woman divorcee. To have a working mother in an Apple paperbacks is revolutionary, at least to childhood me. Ms. Thomas tries, both career-wise and domestically. She isn't perfect, but she still succeeds in giving her children the attention they deserve while seemingly conquering the business world in Stanford. All this while providing a secondary influence on Marianne next door. I like Ms. Thomas, and I think she's a great mother. I would credit her with the spark that gives Christy her great idea. Ms. Thomas needs a babysitter, so she calls every teenager in Stony Brook. Unfortunately, they are all busy. Christy comes up with the idea for someone to call one phone number and reach several sitters. The Babysitter's Club. After Christy completes her decorum homework, she contacts Marianne via their bedroom windows. Christy and Marianne decide to discuss the club with their friend Claudia Kishi. The girls arrive at the Kishi's house, and we have our first outfit description. I rang the Kishi's bell. Claudia came to the door. She was wearing short, very baggy lavender plaid overalls, a white lacy blouse, a black fedora, and red high-top sneakers without socks. Her long black hair was carefully arranged in 4 braids. I felt extremely blah compared to her. Claudia's clothes are an explosion at a paint factory. Just colors and mayhem everywhere. I love her eclectic style, but there are a few problems I have. People need to wear clothes that are an appropriate size. They should not wear clothes that turn them into a giant blob. I know this is new thinking, but truthfully, people look better when clothes fit them. Secondly, under no circumstances should someone wear sneakers with no socks. That is an experiment in foot odor no one wants to undertake. And lastly, no to a fedora. Just no. Never. No fedoras. Ever. For all time. Claudia introduces Christy and Marianne to Stacy McGill, who denies food, her major personality trait. When our resident artist comes up with the logo for the Babysitter's Club, Christy wants to call Claudia a genius, but Claudia is sensitive about that word. Her older sister, Janine, is an actual genius, and the sisters have a strained relationship. As a group, they decide on officers without incident. They also create a flyer with phone numbers that start with KL5, which is something I never understood and still don't understand. Why not just use numbers? Christy's sensitivity to Claudia is a stark contrast to her interactions with Watson, Ms. Thomas's suitor. He brings over Chinese food in an attempt to get to know his girlfriend's family better, but Christy ruins it by refusing the food and establishing open hostility towards him. I get that it's a huge change, but he's not so bad. No matter how mature Christy is with her clients and her friends, she still exhibits immaturity when it comes to Watson. After all, she's still 12 years old. Christy's mother is the first call during the inaugural meeting of the Babysitter's Club. Stacy takes the job after Christy mentions her brothers. Then there's a prank call. I wish this type of prank calling was still the bane of telephone use. If this were written today, the prank calls wouldn't be a juvenile prank orchestrated by Christie's brother like it is in this book. The annoying calls would be from some recordings trying to trick you into buying a cruise, or God forbid, trying to fix a Windows PC that you don't have, or asking you about your car's extended warranty. The first call that is not a prank or a family member is a woman named Mrs. McKeever. She wants a sitter for twins named Buffy and Pinky. Christie would probably make the best first impression for a first-time customer, so she takes the job. Marianne is going to sit for Watson's children, Karen and Andrew. And finally, Claudia takes a job for Mrs. Newton. Chapter 7 starts with a long description of how addresses work. I walked over to Quinton Court right after I got home from school. I left a little early, just in case I had any trouble finding the McKeever's house. Mrs. McKeever had said that the address was 52 Quinton Court, so I found the side of the street with the even-numbered addresses on it and started walking. There was 22 Quinton Court, 28 Quinton Court, 34, 40, 46, and sure enough, there was number 52. I know how addresses work, Christie. This passage would have been necessary if, at the end of 46 Quinton Court, there was a large opening in the ground. But there isn't a chasm. Instead, there is a woman who keeps her children locked in the laundry room. Oh, and they are not children, they are dogs. Two hulking St. Bernards. I would rather babysit for dogs than humans, but Christie doesn't agree. She reluctantly watches over the dogs, but makes it clear that this is the first and only time she's going to do that. She makes Tree Fitty, which made me think of the Loch Ness Monster for pop culture from the Paleolithic era-related reasons. Claudia sits for Jamie Newton and his three cousins, one of whom hates girls and is a future gamer gator. I like Jamie, but I hate his jerk cousins. Claudia reads to Jamie, and that gets the kids to calm the fuck down. She handled the situation well, but fuck those shitty Feldman cousins. David Michael gets a brand new babysitter in Stacy, but the person Stacy is focused on is Christie's older brother Sam. According to Sam himself, Stacy is a foxy chick. You'll have to excuse him, he is a manifestation of Jimi Hendrix. Sam decides to stay behind and play Candyland with Stacy and David Michael. The final babysitter to tell us how her first babysitting job went is Marianne. She introduces us to Karen and Andrew, Watson's children, and future stars of their own book series. I never got into Little Sisters, so don't ask me to write about them. We also meet Boo, mess of a cat Boo. Watson suggests that Marianne just avoid the cat, but when Boo Boo, the cat, not the boys for now, ingenue, gets in Mrs. Porter's garden, Marianne has no choice but to intervene. Karen warns that Mrs. Potter is actually a witch named Morbida Destiny. I love the name. She calls the cat a rapscallion, and Karen thinks it's a curse. Marianne has to inform Karen that it's just a word. Not a curse, a ridiculous, archaic word, but a harmless word nonetheless. Later, Ms. Thomas forces Christie to wear a dress to dinner, where Ms. Thomas and Watson announce their potential engagement. Not their actual engagement, the fact that they might get engaged. This is a misstep for Ms. Thomas. If she has any hope of ameliorating the relationship between Christie and Watson, she should have let Christie wear what she feels comfortable in. She should ask her daughter to wear something nice for the occasion, but shouldn't force Christie into a dress. This does not help the situation. Stacy leaves for New York under mysterious circumstances. Honestly, Christie can be too nosy. It's none of her business why Stacy goes to New York periodically. That's where she's from. Stacy's mom shouldn't have lied on her behalf, but the girl is allowed a little privacy, even from her best friends. Eventually, Christie is forced to babysit for Watson's children, the previously introduced Karen and Andrew. She finds out that they're nice kids and finds common ground in their divorced parents. She tells them, divorced kids are special kids. As Watson drives Christie home, we are treated to an especially sweet passage. Later, as Watson was driving me home, Karen said, Christie, I wish you were a big stepsister, right now. Well, I said, how about if I be your babysitter instead? That's okay, said Karen. Yeah, that's okay, echoed Andrew. I glanced at Watson. He was sneaking a look at me, too. We smiled at each other. After all of Ms. Thomas's forcing Christie to wear a dress and spend time with Watson, it was babysitting, Christie's focused job and love, that brought them closer as a potential family. The book ends with Watson and Ms. Thomas, Edie, I guess, that's not a name for anyone under 70, announcing their official engagement and the BSC's first slumber party. This is where we learn about Stacy's diabetes. To her surprise, her new friends are completely cool and understanding with her complicated health situation. We end with this. I felt deliciously scared and happy. We are friends again. Things were okay with Watson. The Babysitter's Club was a success. I, Kristen Amanda Thomas, had made it work, or helped make it work. I hope that Marianne, Claudia, Stacy, and I, the Babysitter's Club, would stay together for a long time. And they certainly stayed together for hundreds of books, all of which I own. Several years, a TV series I wanted to watch but I couldn't because I didn't have cable. A Netflix TV series, which I saw the first season of, and it's really great. A movie, which I watched recently, that's not great. A CD-ROM game, which I played every day and would still play if I had it. And I did a series on that, and you can find it at my website at rereadingmychildhood.com. And countless other merchandise. I'm always on the lookout for merch. this isn't the first book in a series. This is the first book in a revelation. When I was a young girl, this was the only book series exclusively about a group of distinct girls. Girls with flaws and strengths and stories. I didn't have that with any other book series out there. They all had boys mucking up awesome girl adventures or drippy girls who spent their time nagging boys and not being fun. Anna Martin created my childhood. She created my love of reading, she created my need to write and tell stories, and I don't think I'm that different. I'm sure millions of women my age feel the same way. This book was fantastic, the series was important, and I'm even more excited to read books from my childhood.